want your soul.
Tony walked through the front door of her house and placed a bag of groceries she'd been carrying on the nearby breakfast table. She called out to the house beyond to see if anyone was home, but received no reply. So she turned to start packing the food away into the cupboards, but was suddenly surprised by Andrew, who quickly placed his arms around her from behind and kissed her gently. "Hello, darling," he said, smiling. "That's Captain Darling to you," Tony replied, giggling. "How was your day in the firm?" she asked. "Oh, you know," Andrew said as he began to assist her in packing away the food. "It was slow, and some of the guys gave me stick for hogging all the attention at the lacrosse match."
"But you won the game for the team," Tony cried.
"I know, I know. But you know how jealous people can get. It didn't help I beat them all to the Hutchinson case, but there are no hard feelings, really. They must know that the architectural designs I submitted were simply best for the client. It was just us guys ribbing each other. Besides, I'm sure if there are any real problems, the air will clear tonight when we go out and have a few drinks."
"Oh," sighed Tony, her shoulders dropping and her pace slowing as she shuffled towards the fridge with milk in her hand.
"You promised we'd watch a movie."
"Oh, God, no," cried Andrew. "How inconsiderate of me. I messed up."
"It's okay," Tony smiled through pursed lips, before sinking behind the fridge door where she pouted. "You should have a boys' night out."
"Honey," Andrew said, his face appearing from just around the door. "Do you really think I want to spend time with the guys instead of you?"
"I don't know," she squeaked. Andrew put his hand beneath her chin, and his wholesome smile radiated next to the white glowing fridge door. "The boys can be a bit of fun now and again, but they're awfully bores, and I don't like the way they talk about women."
"Are you sure?" asked Tony, her face beginning to glow with happiness once more. "Are you sure you want to stay in with me and watch The Fault in Our Stars?"
"Oh, please," exclaimed Andrew. "Like I'd ever, ever choose the pub over you."
"Hey, Tony, Tony."
Tony heard a man shouting at her, and she felt her skin crawl in recognition.
"Oh, how you doing?"
The ugly, gaunt, lanky, and tracksuit-clad man started to run across the street towards the bus stop Tony was sat at.
"Oh, hell," he declared loudly once he reached her. "Barely recognized you. How's it going?"
"I'm good, thanks, Skit."
How are you?" Tony asked, surveying the man who was three teeth down from where she met him last.
You know what it's like, don't you? It's hard. Got picked up a few times lately," Skit replied.
"Haven't seen you in a while. You clean now?"
Tony started to answer, but before she could speak, Skit started talking again.
"Ah, of course you are. You look great. Keeping up with the hormones, eh?"
Skit tapped Tony on the arm, and catching her eye, he winked and smiled.
"What are you going by now? Seem to remember you saying something about Alice, was it?
Course you were only just starting to transition back then."
"It's Tony," she answered, trying her best to stay composed. "Tony with an I."
"Oh," cried Skit. "That's clever. Tony becomes Tony. I like it. Why not Alice, though?"
"You liked Alice, far as I remember it."
Tony began to answer when, once again, Skit interrupted her.
"No, wait, let me guess. That prick father of yours, was it?
Probably the only way you'd get him to call you the name you wanted. Am I right?"
Skit then let out a great big guffaw that caught the attention of people walking over 50 feet away.
"Oh," Tony said in total and utter relief as her bus rounded the corner.
"This is my bus."
"Ah, well, shame it's over so quickly.
Before I go, though, you with anybody?"
"Still not with Jordan, I hope," Skit asked, hitting her against the arm again.
Tony said, struggling to balance her desperate urge to flee with her compulsion to be polite.
"An architect named Andrew?"
As she stepped onto the bus and glanced at the driver, she could hear Skit cry out.
"Oh, okay. Ain't you getting all posh, eh? God, girl, you're doing well for yourself. Look, you ever find yourself wanting a bit of, Skid stopped and leaned to the right, squinting past Tony and towards the bus driver. Look, you know what I sell. You know where I'm at. Give me a shout if that posh brick Adam don't work out and you need a dealer. All right, darling? Tony shivered and turned around. Of course. Thanks, Skid. Suddenly, Andrew appeared, and Tony's heart sank. She hadn't even seen him on the bus, and she couldn't bear to think of him having to meet Skid. She'd worked so hard to keep that part of her life tucked away. Although she had never been dishonest with Andrew, she still didn't want him to actually see it all face to face. Who is that? Asked Andrew. But when Tony turned around, she noticed Skid sprinting away as fast as he could. She stuttered. Just an old friend. He's a jumpy guy. I can tell, said Andrew, who was smiling at her, and slowly guiding her downwards towards a nearby seat. Andrew continued to talk for a moment or two, although Tony wasn't paying attention. Instead, she noticed the sounds of sirens in the distance, and she thanked God himself that he'd sent the police and saved her the embarrassment of such a meeting, as it was the only thing on earth that could have made Skid leave so quickly. Tony laid quietly nuzzled into the nook of Andrew's armpit, with her head resting upon his shoulder and his smell washing over her. Away in some hazy distant mess of light and noise, she could just about glimpse the television playing her favorite show. She felt a shiver of warmth crawl up her back, and she smiled to herself as she soaked it all in. It was a dream, she was told, she'd never have. Doctors had told her, teenage girlfriends had told her, and her family had told her that it was a futile pursuit. Once she'd grown up, a few boyfriends made it clear to her that they wouldn't want to stay with her if she persisted with the transition. But she kept on with it, because it was who she was. And lying there, with nothing but Andrew's skin against her cheek, she almost felt like laughing, because she realized that she had also spent her whole life telling herself she would never have it either. And yet she had it. Suddenly, Andrew shuffled in his sleep and began to snore. Tony giggled to herself and raised her head a little to glance up at him. His square jaw with just the right amount of stubble had come to rest against his other shoulder, and she squinted to see whether his eyes were fully closed. Having determined that he was asleep, she sat up quietly and managed to rise up from the sofa. Tony stood up straight and stretched before beginning the journey to the bathroom. She decided, making her way across the tiled floor, that once she went back, she'd wake Andrew and coax him into bed so they might fall asleep, ready for the Saturday morning that awaited them. But not long after she had sat on the porcelain bowl, she suddenly heard a loud knock from behind her. Her heart tore through her throat as she felt the blinding sensation of terror, leaping upwards from the toilet, spraying piss everywhere and yelping. She turned and saw the silhouette of a man projected against the rain-splattered blinds. Hesitantly and shaking in terror, she reached across and did her best to pull up the blinds without making too much noise. Peering through, she saw the weather-beaten face of Skid, white as a corpse and devoid of his usual levity. Shivering, he slowly raised his hand and pressed a finger against his lips before pointing towards her front door. Tony was suddenly furious. She quickly tried to mop up the urine, but realized it was futile, and instead moved around the corner to see whether Andrew was still sleeping soundly. She breathed a sigh of relief when she saw he hadn't moved, and she then turned to march towards Skid. As soon as she had opened the door, Skid asked, "Is it in?" "What?" Tony snapped. Skid then shuffled awkwardly backwards, away from the door, and tried to peer past Tony and into the house. "Is it in?" he whispered. "For God's sake, are you alone?" he asked again. "No," Tony answered, shaking her head. "Andrew's asleep. What do you want?" Skid continued to fidget nervously and bit his nails as he seemed to mull over what he wanted to say. Just as Tony began to find herself without patience, he spoke. You like this then?" he said, waving his arm around the house. "Yes," she answered. "Skid, what do you want?" But Skid didn't seem like he was listening. His eyes never seemed to stay still. He just kept looking around at the house.
"Looks nice to you, does it?" he asked. If it hadn't been for Andrew sleeping soundly, Tony knew she would have started to shout and become threatening. She found herself struggling to maintain any sort of control.
"What are you about?" she hissed.
"The house, darling," Skid answered.
"It looks nice, does it? I mean to you now. It's nice for you, right?"
"Of course it is," she snapped. "It cost Andrew big bucks for this." And Skid couldn't help but laugh.
"I bet it did. Well, I can't stay long. I can't be around when he wakes up. Most people don't see him.
Need a little something in you?"
Skid stopped and mimed the action of injecting something into his arm.
"Skid," Tony said, growing tired.
"What the fuck do you want?"
Away in the distance, Andrew suddenly began to shout.
"Ah, Jesus, what on earth is this? Tony. Tony the dog must have gone in the bathroom. Tony? Tony, where are you?"
Instantly, Skid's eyes grew wide, and he began to back away. Hesitantly, he went to turn and run away before he looked back at Tony, with a look of frustration and exhaustion. Quickly and desperately, he ran back to the door and stood closer to her than he had before.
"What color are its eyes?"
"The right color, am I right?" he said, biting his lip nervously.
"What color is its hair?"
"The best color, huh? How tall?"
"Always 2 inches taller than you, huh? High heels, flats, don't matter. Just the right height. Just the right size.
You like him black. You like him big and muscly. Is he big and muscly? Think."
He nodded towards Tony and pointed threateningly at his temple, as if she was meant to understand a damn thing.
"It's always just right for you, ain't it?" he added, before suddenly sprinting away into the darkness.
"Who's that?" asked Andrew, his head appearing over Tony's shoulder.
It was a delivery. Got the wrong house. Must have been the students next door ordering some takeout."
She was startled now.
"Funny," said Andrew, tilting his head and making eye contact with Tony. "We don't have any neighbors next door that are students."
Tony paused and looked around at the street. It was empty, except for their house.
"Right, of course," she said, smiling. "We've never had any neighbors, have we? Silly me."
She then turned and began to kiss Andrew as she shut the front door behind her.
Skid stood in front of the mirror. Beyond the door, he could hear the tremendous din of a busy cafe, and he felt somewhat vulnerable. But he didn't have his own working shower, so he had to work with what he had. He leaned over the sink and began to scrub his face and wash his hair with a set of stolen toiletries. Once he was finished, he took a bag and removed from it a pair of low-end trousers, a standard white shirt, a pair of shoes, and some socks. He chuckled quietly and thought to himself, "Thank God for self-checkout," before getting changed into his new clothes. Once done, he reached again into the bag and retrieved a pack of baby wipes and thoroughly wiped away at his neck and ears until he was relatively clean. He washed his hands, trying his best to remove the layers of dirt that hid between the cracked skin and calluses, until he finally settled on the conclusion that his disguise was as good as it was going to get. Nervously, he took one final breath before unlocking the door to the disabled toilets and stepping out into the noisy and deeply unsettling atmosphere of the Starbucks cafe he'd been hiding in. He grimaced as he approached the counter and prepared to complete his disguise with one final touch. Grande caramel? He paused and squinted at the menu.
A grande caramel mock moke?
Macchiato? Chirped the pretty young girl behind the counter.
"Yeah, that's right."
He nodded and smiled as she rushed away to make the coffee. When she returned a moment later, he paid the extortionate fee before slinking away to the corner to sit and wait quietly. He sat patiently for about 10 minutes until Tony appeared by the door, and he watched everyone in the shop become unsettlingly quiet. Everyone stopped what they were doing. The whole world came to a halt. And he had to become quiet, too. He had to pretend.
Tony wandered in further, giggling loudly, and proclaimed in the direction of the door, "That's Captain Darling to you." It scuttled in after. "Oh, shush you," Tony cried before leaning closer towards it. "Someone might hear you." Skit swallowed nervously and kept staring forward at his coffee. He tried to watch the events from the corner of his eyes without ever looking directly at them. He could just about make it out. It couldn't have been a few feet away from him. The shape of it, he supposed, was similar to a spider after you'd stamped on it 3 times. And its legs had curled up, but he couldn't be sure. And he knew he couldn't let it get to him. He had to focus on Tony, who had, by now, with very little thought, placed her bag down on the floor, near the table closest to the entrance. It was no more than 6 or 7 inches from Tony's foot. It was a simple, clear plastic bag from Boots, a pharmacy filled with the usual things a person would buy from there, which included painkillers. Tony walked up to the counter where the barista had remained frozen, like everyone else in the shop. "What a funny smell," she exclaimed. She couldn't see the barista had been stopped in time as scalding hot water from the coffee machine poured over her arm. "Oh," Tony smiled at nothing. "That sounds fantastic, but no thank you." She nodded and gestured towards the flittering indistinct mass of anthropod legs. "He's the one who likes coffee. He'd like a tall Americano with an extra shot of espresso." Tony waited and tapped quirkily at the checkout. Nothing was moving. Nothing had changed. Responding to silence, she suddenly began to speak once more. "Oh, great, thank you." She leaned forward and took an imaginary coffee from the air and thanked the frozen barista. She then reached into her pocket and took out some change, which she proceeded to drop straight onto the floor behind the counter. Tony turned, clutching the invisible cup of coffee, and handed it to the thing by the door. "Here you go, baby," she smiled. "Oh," she cried out loud, laughing hysterically. "Andrew, just stop it. Keep it to yourself, at least in public." Skit's heart was in his throat now. He couldn't move. He just had to watch the strange and inexplicable display. The thing began to scuttle towards the door, and Skit's heart raced as Tony approached him. She leaned down once more and picked up a clear, plain Boots bag with nothing in it but a pack of falsified painkillers that Skit had replaced. It wasn't the bag she had come in with. Skit wanted to tuck her actual bag away. She wanted to pull it in towards him and edge his chances. But he couldn't. He could do nothing but pray. Thankfully, Tony picked up the decoy bag mindlessly, and she left the Starbucks chasing after the skittering shape. Once it all ended, Skit heard a scream and the clatter of metal. Everything was starting up again. People began to talk, and the poor barista came to her senses just in time to find chunks of her skin slumping down onto the floor in a wet and bloodied mess. Skit breathed a sigh of anxious relief before bursting into tears. That night, after the innocuous Starbucks visit, Tony had the worst nightmare of her life. She didn't know why. In fact, the day had been one of the best she'd ever had. She was ecstatic when she managed to convince Andrew to take the day off from work. And together they spent the afternoon in town going from shop to shop. And while she didn't want to admit it, she reveled in being spoiled like a little princess. As an adolescent, struggling to transition without the proper money and medical care, she had always found shopping a horrifying experience. But with Andrew, that all changed. They just got to be themselves. After shopping, they had gone for food, and along with great service, Andrew insisted that Tony get dessert and enjoy herself as much as possible. After all this, they went home, and she snuck away into the bathroom to take some painkillers for a headache. And she noticed that the packaging was different from what she expected. But she thought nothing of it and took the pills before returning to Andrew. But then, after falling asleep, she had the nightmare. It was a twisted mess of arachnophobic imagery and a textured barrage of hair and crooked legs forcing their way into her mouth and up through her body. She could feel bristling outwards from these limbs, a million hypodermic hairs that pierced her skin and ruptured the flesh, forcing their way beneath layers of muscle and bone and pumping some unseen fluid into her. She could feel the internal pressure increasing. She could feel her bones being violated and her muscles being torn. And she could feel her stomach and all of her digestive tract stretching outwards as it was filled with some unseen forceful pressure. She woke up gagging violently and desperately trying to breathe until something else took over and, rolling over so that her head was leaned over the bed and facing the floor, she vomited relentlessly. She could do nothing but retch up gallons of a strange, clear fluid. She tried to call out Andrew's name, but there was no stopping it. She barely managed to cough and heave enough air into her lungs to stay conscious as she spewed up an endless rush of bile onto the floor. She kept trying to lean up and see where she was, but she struggled to make out the unfamiliar environment as each retch brought painful, agonizing spasms that tore her view away from her control. Finally, after what felt like 20 minutes, she stopped. She laid still for a while, shaking violently and struggling to stay conscious, and watched her saliva roll off her bottom lip and plop onto the floor below. After a minute or two, she regained herself and couldn't help but notice that the laminate oak flooring, while definitely worn and weathered well beyond her recollections, was distinctly familiar. Similarly, she noticed as she rolled over and sat up that the bed she was laying in was also a rotten and grimy replica of her own. Even the bedspread and the dainty pillows looked so similar to her own bedding. But she knew somehow that they couldn't be hers because her belongings were kept impeccably. While these were stained and smelled unbelievably bad. In fact, as she patted her hand against the dimly lit fabric, she noticed the material was caked in some sort of fluids. She was too weak to spring up out of disgust, like she wanted, so she rolled awkwardly off the bed. Her bare feet made a strange squelch as she stepped onto the floor, and she felt the warm stew of vomit slide between her toes. She stood up and struggled to stay upright before fumbling towards the dim glow of the doorway. "Andrew," she muttered in a raspy, broken voice. "Andrew?" She tried again, this time a little more clearly, but there was no response. She approached the door and opened it to reveal the hallway bathed in a glaring light. She stepped out onto the dusty floor and looked around at a familiar layout of a cobweb-ridden, encrusted walkway. It was definitely her hallway. There were childhood pictures of her on some of the walls, but it felt like a grotesque perversion of her memory. One photo of her and Andrew on the white cliffs of Dover, a crowning moment in her life she had never forgotten, showed only her now, awkwardly standing alone with her arm around nothing. "Andrew," she cried, this time loudly and desperately afraid, and suddenly there was a thunderous bang from below. Confused, she looked around and noticed a branch of the hallway she'd never seen before. Perhaps, she thought, it wasn't her house after all. This path led to a flight of stairs that descended down into a basement, but she knew quite certainly that their home had no basement. "Andrew! Andrew, please help me. Where am I? Hello? Hello?" She began to yell down into the darkness. She looked and saw the steps fade away, stretching downwards from the light cast by the hallway above. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a strange mass, a rugose column as wide as a lamppost and covered in hairs as thick as a cigarette, slumped violently down upon the farthest step and up against the wall. Tony let out a shrill scream when suddenly another one, as if unfurling from the darkness itself, slapped against the second step. And then another leg appeared, and then another. Tony backed away from the door, pushing herself up against the wall, unable to stop herself screaming as she watched this nightmare unfold before her eyes. One after another, an endless supply of legs ascended the wall and steps until finally it reached the top. And out of the darkness, it rose up. An unfathomable cacophony of visual noise stood before her, its legs violently belching outwards from some barely discernible central mass and making contact with every surrounding surface until nothing behind it could be seen. The limbs were at once stiff and malleable, and the moment of its foul and warped limbs touched a surface of corruption as silk grew outwards from the point of contact, like the cracks in shattered glass. It never seemed to stop growing, no matter how long it remained still. Tony was screaming at the top of her lungs now. She could feel her throat dry and ache, but no matter what she did, she couldn't stop. Instead, she fell downwards against the wall, until finally, her incessant screaming waned and she began to sob messily and uncontrollably. The knot of writhing limbs at the center of this mess inched forward erratically, and Tony let out a yelp like a frightened dog. She tried to look away and shut her eyes, but before she could, the slithering knot revealed an orb the size of a basketball from its central bundle. She could see herself in the reflection, and she looked like a snotty girl heaving frantically. The obsidian ball rotated in the socket of shifting tentacles and seemed to assess her clinically before, with shutter-like speed, the entire mess moved backwards and twisted anxiously from side to side. It refocused once more on Tony, and from somewhere within itself, a thunderous alien rumble droned outwards. Tentatively, it stretched one lone tentacle outwards and moved it towards Tony. She screamed and began to shuffle helplessly backwards, but it was too quick. She could do nothing but watch as it changed before her eyes, flickering from a slithering tentacle into an insect-like antenna, until it finally made contact with the skin of her arm. Immediately, the hair shot out and pierced her skin. Tony felt the most unbearable pain, and screaming in agony, she wrenched her arm away, snapping the suddenly fragile and glass-like needles in place. The knot winced backwards, seemingly in pain, and Tony watched the stiff hairs quickly turn soft in her arms and begin to burrow. The pain was so intense she tried to pull them out, but they were far too quick, and even the one or two that she managed to rip forcefully out from her skin just turned around and immediately penetrated her palm and slithered away down that route instead. The effect was immediate. She felt her head loosen. Her skin grew warm and her mood shifted. She looked around and felt everything turned fuzzy. It was a strange feeling. Not even heroin had come close to feeling as good as she did in that moment. Everything washed away. All her fear, all her terror turned to nothing as she lost consciousness. She woke up the following morning in her own bed, sobbing and screaming. "Tony," screamed Andrew from the kitchen far away. "Tony." His face appeared around the door, and in no time at all, he had his arms wrapped around her, cradling the hysterical girl in his arms. "It's okay," he whispered, stroking her hair. "It's all okay, baby. Everything's gonna be fine. Someone spiked you, that's all, babe. You don't remember, but we went to a bar. Someone spiked your drink and you had the worst reaction. I think they put heroin in your drink. Can you believe that? Someone slipped you that horrible, nasty drug." Tony nestled into his arms, her head resting perfectly beneath his chin. Skit watched Tony step onto the bus and sit down by herself near the front. He watched for as long as he could and waited until he was positive she was alone. He then crossed the street and walked towards her, trying his best not to catch her attention until he was closer. "You okay?" he asked, stepping onto the bus. Tony didn't respond immediately. She just remained staring down at the pavement. "Yeah," she replied after a second or two had passed. It doesn't like opiates, believe it or not," he said, hoping she knew what he meant. "It hates them, in fact. Don't know how it does it. Think it's to do with the little, I guess their hairs, that it grows out." Skit paused for a moment and looked across to Tony, who seemed somewhat different now. He knew that what he'd done would have resulted in a nightmarish experience, so he continued. "It's tough to really know what is or isn't real around them. I think they can tap right into your head with those little hairs." "Why?" Tony said. Her voice was quiet and she trembled when speaking. "Why do you think they do what they do?" "I don't know," Skit answered. "They pick people like us most of the time. I think they pick people who've suffered, people no one gives a shit about. I know they like people without family. I think they use us for something. I've thought about it a lot. I think we might be some kind of chemical filter, or maybe they use us for digestion. Whatever it is, they use us up. And when they're done, they just throw us away." "What do you mean, throw you away?" Tony asked, her tone of voice becoming a little firmer as she asked it.
I don't know, Skip replied. It wasn't me, you see. It was this girl I knew. She used to like ecstasy, but one night I was all out. And when she came home to me, I just kind of thought it'd be funny to give her something else. So I gave her these painkillers and she went back to her apartment and took some. And Jesus, I just heard this explosion. I ran out and the door was blown off the hinges and, you know, she was nowhere. It was like the room had been painted. And just around the corner of her front door was the stairwell for the block of apartments. And I remember just seeing the light flicker for a moment and Skid paused and he went noticeably white. It stayed there. Like it thought I couldn't see it, but I could. And I was just stuck there on the spot, terrified, staring at this thing. And then the weirdest thing happened. The guy in the apartment above, he just walked up the stairs right past it, and he didn't even notice. I thought for a while that maybe I was just tripping, but then I just kept seeing them. Other people don't see them. Most other addicts don't even see them. And the ones that do just sound totally nuts. It is a parasite, though, don't you see? He said. It preys on the weak and the lonely. Skid felt the bus slow, and his heart began to race as he noticed the growing silence. He turned and looked at Tony, whose face just wouldn't stop changing, like words in a dream. And he looked at the frozen people across the street, and he himself grew unable to move. Ahead on the road, a woman, plastic bags full of food wrapped around her wrists, stopped still. And Skid could do nothing as he watched the bus carry on forward and roll over her with a dreadful bump. The girl turned to Skid and placed a hand on his thigh and smiled remorsefully. "We don't pick on the weak," she smiled. That's like saying a charity preys on the homeless, or describing a couple who rescues a stray dog is victimizing it. And we don't use anything up either. You call us parasites, and that's pretty offensive. We have so much to give, unspeakable amounts, and we enjoy having you as companions. Skid felt sick with fear as the magnitude of the situation dawned on him. He tried to speak, but he couldn't. "Well, what happened, happened," she continued chirpily. "Opiates hurt us worse than they hurt you. And, Skit, to be frank, they've hurt you. At least we don't get addicted. And if we know it's coming, it's not really that bad, but that night you caught me off guard. Normally we can fix anything. See?" Tony then tapped Skit on the arm and pointed towards the same woman who had just been run over. She was standing now and had walked up to the side of the bus to look at Skit and wave. "I mean," the girl continued, "we break every bone in your body at night, and then we just put it all back together come morning." "Oh, and Andrew, by the way?" The girl turned to Skid and poked him in the leg pointedly. "He is very upset. You really hurt his feelings. Why would you do that, James? No reason to break that sweet couple up. Andrew's a good guy as well. He's young, too, only a few centuries old. I mean, what did you even want?" The girl stopped and waited for Skit's reply until she quickly remembered her actions and loosened his lips. "Well?" she asked. I just wanted the truth," Skit stuttered, tears streaming from his eyes. "I wanted her to see what you things do." "We do a lot," Tony answered. "But Skit, just for you, I'll do even more. I spoke to Andrew, who was nice enough to call in a favor for me. Now, I can't give you Tony. She's with Andrew. And he's already jealous enough about the attention you've given her. It was only at the last moment he managed to turn things around, and it's important to him that he doesn't have to make her love him, even if it would be so little work to him. But I can still look like Tony for you. I can be Tony and a lot more, too. I'll have a different hair color every day, just for you. When you see a cute girl with freckles, you'll look back at me and I'll have freckles. I'll be skinny. I'll be buxom and curvy.
tall and short, all at the same time. It'll only be 4 or 5 decades at most, and what's that to me? Tony moved her hand up Skit's thighs, and he felt her fingers tighten around his leg. He watched, unable to move, as this girl leaned across and put her arms around him, hugging him tightly. Her soft head rested against his shoulders, and her hair smelled of coconuts and tickled his nose. It won't be a bad life for you, James. I can be very accommodating. The girl chuckled to herself. You'll be very accommodating.